Section 1. You'll hear someone booking transport for a trip. First, you have some time to look at questions 1 and 2. You'll see that there is an example which has been done for you. On this occasion only, the conversation relating to this will be played first.
Good morning, Burnham Coaches. Sarah speaking. How can I help you?
Ah, yes. Good morning. I'm a teacher at the Down Language School. We have a bit of a problem, and I was wondering if you could help us out.
The man says he is a teacher, so teacher has been written in the gap. Now we shall begin. You should answer the questions as you listen, because you will not hear the recording a second time. Listen carefully and answer questions 1 and 2.
Good morning, Burnham Coaches. Sarah speaking. How can I help you?
Ah, yes. Good morning. I'm a teacher at the Down Language School. We have a bit of a problem, and I was wondering if you could help us out.
What is the problem exactly?
Well, we normally take our students on an excursion at the end of their course. But unfortunately, the coach firm we normally use has let us down. It seems they've gone out of business.
I'm sorry to hear that. I suppose you are looking for a replacement.
Well, yes. We won't need a very large coach, actually. There will be 30 students and 4 teachers.
So that's 34 in all. And what dates did you have in mind?
The last Saturday and Sunday of this month. That's the 28th and 29th.
The 28th and 29th. Does that mean you are planning to stay somewhere overnight?
That's right. Actually, we want to do the same excursion that we do every year. We usually visit Stonehenge, Salisbury, and stay overnight in Bath. It's a historical tour, really.
It sounds interesting. Let me just see what we have available. Oh dear, I'm afraid all our coaches are booked out for the 28th. It's the busiest time of the year for us, actually.
I was afraid that would be a problem. But you have a coach available for the 29th?
Yes, we do. And it's available for the 30th as well, if that's any help to you.
I'm afraid not. Sunday is the last day. The students go home on Monday. I think we'll just have to change our plans a bit and leave out Salisbury. It's a shame, but I don't think we can fit in all 3 places in one day.
So, you would like to book the coach for the 29th, visiting Stonehenge and Bath, is that right?
Yes, I think so.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 3 to 10. Now listen and answer questions 3 to 10.
Right, I just need a few details, sir.
OK. My name is Paul Scott.
S-C-O-T?
It's double T, actually.
I'm sorry. And it's the Down Language School. Could you give me the address for that, Mr. Scott?
Yes, it's Down House, Hill Street, Brighton. Do you need the postcode?
No, that's not necessary, but I do need a contact number.
Of course. The number for the school secretary is 01273-512-634. You can contact her if you need to speak to anyone.
Right, and what time would you like the coach to pick you up?
Well, I think we'll have to make an early start. Would 7:30 be all right?
Yes, no problem at all. What time do you want to be back?
Oh, any time between 10 and 11 will be all right. Not later than 11, though.
Right, I'll make a note of that. 11 p.m. latest. There's just one more thing I need to know. Presumably, you'll be visiting Stonehenge first. How long do you want to stay there?
Well, we normally stay about an hour. The main objective of the excursion is for the students to see the Georgian architecture in Bath, really.
Yes, Bath is lovely, isn't it? I was there myself a couple of years ago. I thought the Royal Crescent was absolutely stunning. I hadn't realised how large it is. Well, I think that's all I need to know, Mr. Scott. Thank you for booking with us.
Just a minute. There's one thing you seem to have forgotten. How much will this cost?
Oh, I'm terribly sorry. I was thinking about Bath. Just bear with me a moment. Yes, it's a round trip of 300 miles and a total time of 16 hours for the driver. For a 45-seater coach, that will be a total of £500, including tax and insurance.
Do we have to have such a large coach? There are only 34 of us.
We don't have any smaller coaches, I'm afraid.
Oh, well. At least we won't be cramped for space. When do we have to pay?
We require a 20% deposit to confirm the booking. I suggest that you do that as soon as possible, today if you can. The balance you can give to the driver if you're paying by cheque. Have the cheque made out to Burnham Coaches.
I think that'll be all right. I will have to check this with the school accountant, but if all is well, I'll arrange for someone to bring you the deposit within the next 2 hours.
That'll be fine, Mr. Scott.
Well, thank you very much indeed. Goodbye.
Goodbye. That is the end of section one. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to section two. Section two. You'll hear a tour guide talking to a group of visitors about Bestley Castle. First, you have some time to look at questions 11 to 15. Now listen carefully and answer questions 11 to 15.
Welcome to Bestley Castle. It's nice to see so many of you here today. Before we go in, I'd like to tell you some information about the castle, the things to see and do, and the facilities available to you in the grounds. We'll do our best to make this a truly memorable visit. Now, the castle grounds are quite big, and we don't want you to get lost, so I'm going to give you an idea of the layout. At the moment, we are at the entrance, and immediately to our left is the tourist information office. Go here if you need any questions answered. They'll be happy to help. And of course, behind the tourist office is the car park where the coach dropped you off. And it'll also pick you up from the same spot at 5 p.m. today. In front of us are the water gardens. If you stroll through, you get to the North Bridge, which is the entrance to Bestley Castle. Take your time and enjoy looking around the castle. There's a lot of history steeped in those walls. As you leave the castle via the South Bridge, you'll be greeted with the sight of roaming deer. During the day, there will be scheduled feeding opportunities where visitors can get involved. However, we do request that you do not feed the deer outside these times. To the right of the deer park is the Castle Museum, and behind that is our award-winning restaurant. It's a relatively new addition to the castle grounds, but is fast gaining a reputation for its food. Alternatively, you can choose to dine in the picnic area on the other side of the deer park. It's perfect for the family as it's next to the kids' play area and homemade ice cream hut. We hope that on your way out, you pop into the gift shop by the exit for something to remember us by.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 16 to 20. Now listen and answer questions 16 to 20.
Admission to the grounds is free for all. That includes the museum, gardens, and picnic area. There is an admission fee for the castle, which is £6.50 for adults, with a 10% discount for students and retired people. Children under the age of 16 pay half adult price, and under 8 go in free. There are many spectacular events throughout the year, and for most of them, there's also an admission fee. As these events are in high demand, it's a good idea to book well in advance. Some of the exciting events planned for this year are the Summer Medieval Festival, where you can watch old-fashioned knights and experience a feast in the halls of the castle, as if you were a guest of King Henry VIII himself. There are several concerts planned this year too, including a rock concert at an admission price of £10 per person and a special jazz concert, which is free to the public. I'm sure you'll agree that all tastes and ages will be satisfied. One scary but extremely popular event is the annual Haunted Castle event at the end of October, where the castle comes alive at night. Why don't you come along, if you're brave enough? Another sight to see is the fantastic firework display on November 5th, and the cost of that includes refreshments. We also have a long tradition of raising money for charity. The charity event, held every year on the first day of May, will this year be an archery contest. Entrance is free, but donations are certainly welcome. This year, we'll be collecting money on behalf of a charity for elderly people, Age Concern. Just in case you can't remember all of that, you can pick up a leaflet showing the timetable and prices for all events from the Tourist Information Desk. You can also go online to get this information from our website.
That is the end of Section 2. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to Section 3. Section 3. You'll hear three university students talking about a presentation which one of them has to give. First, you have some time to look at questions 21 to 24. Now listen carefully and answer questions 21 to 24.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Isabel.
Hi, Paul.
Oh, hi, Paul. I've heard you've been stressing out about your presentation on art.
I am.
Are you still going to talk about the different types of art?
Yes. Well, I was planning to, but there's so much stuff on the subject that I'm finding it difficult to put it all into one short presentation.
Huh. I usually have the opposite problem. There's nothing worse than going blank, forgetting your words in front of a group of people.
Well, the problem is that I don't know how to organize what I want to say in the presentation.
Well, you know everything there is to know about the subject. It's just a question of selecting what you want to talk about.
Well, there's a lot to discuss about the different periods in art.
That's a good way to start. Then you can bring in how specific types of art were popular in each period.
Yes, like how sculpture was popular in the classical period and paintings were popular in the Renaissance period.
And how now a wide variety of media are used to create modern art.
As long as you keep it concise, because it's a large area, there are so many periods and movements in art, and you don't want to just list them one by one.
I agree. An explanation of the movements and periods in art wouldn't be too long.
You're right. I need to just pick out some key points. Just mention the periods quickly so that I can move on to the real topic of the presentation.
Yes, the variety of art, like sculpture, paintings, installations.
I have an idea. Why don't you prepare a timeline to show to the class? That would be a nice visual, and it would focus your ideas so you don't get too sidetracked.
Great idea. It would certainly cut down on time.
Right then. Where are we? You'll begin with a very short introduction to the historical periods of art. Then, you'll talk about popular types of art within these periods. That's sorted. Maybe you could also mention some key works of art in each period, like the Venus de Milo statue or the screen by Edvard Munch, and give some interesting facts on them.
That's not a bad idea, because it does give people a frame of reference when I talk about specific kinds of art. After giving a historical context, I should really talk about different forms of art, shouldn't I?
Yes, you should.
After that, you can conclude with a question on what is considered to be art. Now, that would be really interesting.
Yes, comparing the traditional views of art with modern views.
Exactly.
I think I'll have a collection of pictures, including famous pieces of art from classic to modern, projected on the wall, like the Mona Lisa, and some pop art, and ask people whether they think it's art or not.
Before you hear the rest of the conversation, you have some time to look at questions 25 to 30. Now listen and answer questions 25 to 30.
Showing some famous works and asking people what art is would certainly lead to discussion in the room. People's appreciation of art is so subjective, and it comes down to taste.
That's what I'm hoping for. Some disagreement to liven up the presentation.
And you could stick in some really controversial ones like graffiti and modern art installations in between pieces of art that are universally accepted, like the work of the Renaissance painters.
Sounds good to me. I have to say, I really don't understand some modern art myself. There was one recently that was just a pile of rubbish. It doesn't require much skill to create, does it? And what does it mean? There's no point to it.
Actually, Joe, I like some modern art. It makes you look at the world in a different way. Artists now have the freedom to express themselves completely.
Yes, but there is an idea now that anything can be art.
I've heard of paintings being sold for large sums of money, which have been done by small children and animals.
Now that's ridiculous.
Oh, you could find one of those paintings and put it in your presentation, couldn't you, Paul? That would really be interesting.
Well, Paul, what do you think?
I like it. Just thinking. I'll need to do some more research to find pictures for the slideshow.
Yes, we can help you, can't we, Joe?
Of course. If you go to the fine arts section of the library, I'm sure you'll find everything you need. Just ask the staff and they'll give you access to a slide bank of hundreds of famous works of art. And if you still can't find what you're looking for, use the library computers to go online. There are lots of images on the internet. Of course, you'll need to use a search engine like Google, but it's dead easy.
Thanks, guys. I'm feeling much clearer about the project. Your ideas have been really useful. I think I should end with a quote of some kind by a famous artist. What do you think?
That's a good idea. Now let's go to the library and see what they have.
That is the end of Section 3. You now have half a minute to check your answers. Now turn to Section 4. Section 4. You'll hear a man giving a lecture on nuclear fusion. First, you have some time to look at questions 31 to 33. Now listen carefully and answer questions 31 to 33.
I'd like to start by thanking so many of you for attending this, my first public lecture at this magnificent university. I'm going to be talking to you today about nuclear fusion. Before I proceed further, I would like to apologize on behalf of some of our newspapers for the sensationalist and hopelessly inaccurate articles that have been published on the subject over the years. I must confess that my own interest in the subject was actually stimulated by an article published more than 50 years ago in a popular Sunday tabloid with the impressive title Power from the Sea. Today, most people would probably interpret such a title as an introduction to a discussion on the latest developments in renewable energy sources, such as wave technology or generating electricity from tidal flows. But back then, little, if any, progress had been made in these fields since the invention of the water wheel. As I recall, following coverage of the opening of the world's first commercial nuclear power station, more than 50 years ago now, at Calder Hall in 1956, the article promised that we would have limitless, almost free electricity within 10 years. It claimed that we could do this using an isotope of water, deuterium, from the sea. This would be used in reactors to combine simple molecules of hydrogen to form helium, releasing energy in the process. Of course, this is different from the process of nuclear fission, which today's nuclear reactors use. I wouldn't like to say that the article I read as a boy was totally inaccurate. It's true that the concept of producing energy from nuclear fusion, essentially reproducing the reactions by which our sun and other stars produce energy, depends on fusing atoms of hydrogen, but the timescale suggested was hopelessly wrong. To this day, despite some very embarrassing false claims from scientists who should have known better, we have not been able to produce energy from nuclear fusion in a controllable way. Let me make clear what I mean by this statement, before some journalist in the audience gets hold of the wrong end of the stick. Yes, we have been able to fuse hydrogen atoms to produce helium and a release of energy, but the balance account has always been negative. We've always had to put more energy into the reaction than we've ever succeeded in getting out. We know the theory works, but we still do not know if we can get fusion to work for us and solve the problem of our energy needs.
Before you hear the rest of the talk, you have some time to look at questions 34 to 40. Now listen and answer questions 34 to 40.
Here, I will briefly explain these problems before going on to give you a summary of the innovative ways being tested to overcome them. First of all, we have to try to understand the incredible physical conditions that exist inside a natural nuclear fusion reactor, such as the Sun. To start with, we have to create temperatures never experienced on our planet. Indeed, if we had experienced the temperatures required, then our planet would never have formed. We have to generate temperatures of at least 100 million degrees Celsius in a carefully controlled environment before we can even hope to produce a fusion reaction. The problems are immense, but it can be done. Many of you will know that you can put your hand into a very hot oven and not get burnt, provided you do not touch any of the surfaces. I won't go into the reasons for this phenomenon here, but we are applying roughly the same principles in designs for fusion reactors. I think I can promise you that the heat will be confined to a very small area. The other major problem we have to find a solution to is pressure. The pressures in a massive body like the Sun are vast, and this is what brings the hydrogen atoms into such close proximity to one another that they fuse into helium. We may not have to achieve the same pressures in a fusion reactor, but even so, it is a huge technological problem. What then makes me hopeful about the future of energy from nuclear fusion? Perhaps surprisingly, it is developments in laser technology. We can now use lasers to control the nuclear fuel pellets so that they remain suspended inside the reactor without touching the sides. Remember that these pellets are quite small, and because they contain atoms of deuterium and tritium, the two isotopic forms of hydrogen that can be used in these reactions, they are quite light. The lasers will also compress the fuel pellet to raise the pressure to that required to initiate the fusion reaction. Another, far more powerful laser will be used to heat the fuel pellet to the temperature required. This laser, if you like, will act as the trigger to start the reaction. Once started, it is hoped that the reaction will produce enough energy to maintain itself, and also that it will produce a surplus in the form of heat that can be used to produce the steam needed to drive turbines in order to generate the electricity the world needs. To give you some idea of how much energy we can produce, it has been calculated that just 1 kilogram of fusion fuel is capable of producing the same amount of energy as 10,000 tons of fossil fuel. I think you would agree that such an objective is worth working towards. I believe, and I am not alone in this, that nuclear fusion could supply the world's energy needs for centuries to come.
That is the end of section 4. You now have